Coming up on today's show...
I was there for two nights at Prince's legendary O2 Arena and was a support act for him. And it was really incredible, you know, to just be part of that whole experience and see him do a private sound check and be one of four people in the front row watching him sing The Beautiful Ones on keys.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Los Angeles, my guest is an award-winning artist who has a new album that features two Grammy winners and two Grammy nominees coming out the day after tomorrow on Friday, August 30th. In just over 2 weeks, she will be performing at Sages and Sciences with Deepak Chopra at Harvard, and at the end of next month at the Clive Davis Theater at the Grammy Museum. She has previously collaborated with the likes of Prince, Enrique Iglesias, and Grammy-nominated producer George Landris, among others. She has performed in Europe, as well as here in the U.S. at South by Southwest. Her top five songs on Spotify alone have a combined total of over 2.6 million streams. You've been hearing a song of hers called Kali. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Radhika Vakharia.
Hi, Bruce. It's nice to be here. Thank you for a wonderful introduction.
Radhika, I'm looking forward to our conversation. Thank you so much for making time to speak with me today.
Of course.
Let's get started by having you share first with the audience about the song of yours that was just playing during the intro called Kali.
Thank you. Yeah, Kali is a song in Sanskrit, an ancient language. And it talks about the goddess of time. And it's really a celebration about the goddess of time. She's a really powerful figure in Hindu spirituality. And I wanted to celebrate her and bring her forward in this way.
Now, for the uninitiated, talk a little bit more about Sanskrit, which you just mentioned, in case people don't know what that is.
Yeah, Sanskrit is a really old language from the Indian subcontinental area. It's considered probably around over 10,000 years old, if not older. And it's a vibratory language. So relative to, say, modern languages, whereby association, you know what something is, Sanskrit carries a really powerful vibration. So when you sing it or you listen to it, your body begins to vibrate with the same frequency as those words, and the qualities of those words start to come alive within you.
Now, I have had guests on this show who will put out a song that is, say, in both English and Spanish. They mix the lyrics throughout the song. So when you get this idea, Radhika, do you say, I'm going to do it all in English? Do you decide I'm going to do it all in Spanish? Like, what is your process of deciding which approach you're going to take to a song such as Kali, for example?
That's a really great question. I don't really think about it too much because I am fascinated by different languages. And so for me, it's whatever feels right in the music. It's whatever feels right in the song. And Kali was actually a co-write with a woman called Divya Prabha. And she's written a lot of kind of chant-style music. So it really was a template upon which to build, and I wanted to keep the sacredness of the language in order to preserve the idea of singing about Kali herself.
Well, congratulations on the new album called Warriors of Light, which comes out the day after tomorrow on Friday, August 30th. I mentioned in the intro that there are two Grammy winners and two Grammy nominees on the project, but tell us all about it. How many songs are there? Where was it recorded? The four individuals I'm referring to, give us all the details about this new release.
Thank you. Yes, I'm really excited about Warriors of Light. It took about 4 years to make this. A lot of research, a lot of love, a lot of practice. And yeah, we have Max CT from House of Waters. He's a beautiful Grammy-nominated Howard Dolphin player. And we have Kit Wakeley, who is a Grammy-winning composer and orchestrator. He had his Adoption Story won a Grammy a couple of years ago. George Landris, who's a producer, he's Grammy-nominated as well. He's done a beautiful job on this album. And we have MB Gordy, who plays with Opium Moon, and he did a lot of the percussion as well on this album. And really, this album is, I think that with music, and especially sacred music sometimes, we often don't talk about the spirit of what it is to fight to be who you are. And Warriors of Light really is a journey to standing in yourself, self-sovereignty, and fight for that. That's why it's called Warriors of Light. There's nine pieces on the album, and actually it's kind of a tapestry of singing, spoken word, English, Tamil, and Avadi and Sanskrit. And the last three are kind of different dialects from the Indian subcontinental region. And I really wanted to celebrate the different sound sciences, if you will, and vibratory experiences of these warrior aspects of these manifestations of universal forces. That's essentially what these songs are speaking about or singing about, is manifestations of universal forces that appear in different ways in our lives, within our own bodies and minds. And it goes from the beginning, is kind of starting at this place of chaos. The first track literally says, "Lead me from untruth to truth, lead me from darkness to light, lead me from death to liberation. Let there be peace, let there be peace, let there be peace." So you're starting in this place of, I want to transform. And normally when you are in that place, it starts with a bit of chaos in our life. And then as the journey goes on through the album, there's a turning point in the middle of the album where we realize we have to become what we were always meant to become. And by the end of it, we sit on our own self-sovereignty and take our rightful place in our own hearts, the throne of our own kingdom. And the last piece is a prayer for the wellness of all. It is a listening experience from the beginning to end. But interestingly enough, you can listen to it backwards as well. You can start in a place of peace and work your way backwards, intentionally going towards that transformational moment. And that just naturally happened. When I create, I don't really think about it, because I don't believe that life should be lived within a construct. I really feel like the most beautiful things emerge when we just give ourselves to a process, often we don't even know what that process is. And so it's transpired that you can listen to this both ways. And we all, as human beings, find ourselves at some point on the spectrum between peace and transformation. Life is an oscillation between those two. And on this album, you can start at any point and go through a journey.
Please feel free to put me in my place if I'm way off on this, but at the same time, even though we're just meeting each other, I won't be upset if you tell me that I'm wrong in this. But I'm listening to you talk, and I've interviewed so many country artists, and the songwriters in the country music genre will talk about three of them, or sometimes even four of them, getting together in a room, and they'll say that there's just this silence, that they know that the song is there. They're just waiting for it to move them. They're waiting for the song to kind of write itself with them and take over. Am I onto something in terms of, I'm picturing you maybe in almost a deliberate meditative state to wait for these songs to come to you. Is there still some common ground there, though, or is it in fact very different? And how dare I compare country music?
I mean, country music really is the music of the heart, right? And so you can't really hear your music of the heart if there's a lot of noise around you. So in order to hear it deeply and allow that voice to come through, you need to cultivate a bit of silence. And I don't just think that is with music, I think that's with life. Music is full of purpose. There's a purpose in the soul to be heard. And music is the most profound vehicles to do that. And I don't believe in forcing things. You can't force the heart. I mean, when you look at the heart, it's self-determined. It beats without you doing anything, right? So it has this aliveness to it, a life of its own, and you just need to give it space. And so, yes, I sit down, and if I'm inspired, there's a divine inspiration, it comes and I let it be what it is. But one of the songs on the album, Release Your Fears, that took over a year to write. A year. I've never taken so long to write a song, because I'm writing about this divine female presence. And how do you turn something that conceptually is over thousands and thousands and thousands of years old in a language and a philosophy that was not in English? How do you explain that in English? You know, it took me a really long time. And that song actually did come out of a meditation. I did a particular meditation one night, and after a year, I just let it go. I let go of writing the song, because again, it doesn't feel right when things are forced. As you say, the country thing was just kind of wait. And after a year, I found myself doing this process, and I remember it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And then after that process, immediately, I jumped on the piano, and the words just flowed out in English. You know, because you're taking eons of time of philosophy and spiritual experience and sacredness, and you're trying to convey that in the modern world. It's a big bridge to cross, you know, and the conditions, you know, if you think about crossing a very tender bridge, you know, the weather conditions have to be right, you have to be ready, you have to be okay with the current of the river underneath you. There's a lot of conditions that need to come together in order for that transmission to happen. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. I think it's a great comparison, actually, with the country artist.
Well, not to mention that what you just described, you're taking all that history and you're also trying to make it fit into a four-minute package, into a four-minute song. So that is a huge, huge task. But I'm glad that you started down this road, because I noticed when I first asked you to talk about Warriors of Light that you said 4 years of research, and I would love to hear more about that, 4 years of research.
Yes, so I have sung in Sanskrit ever since I was very, very young, but Tamil and the Avadhi language are a little different. So one of the songs on the album, the Agni Tatara, the Dance of Countless Stars, is a poem by Sage Agastya, who was around a very, very long time ago. And the language is the Tamil language, which is not really a native language to me. And so the pronunciations in that are very phonetically complex. And I had to research and study, because again, you know, you want to honor these poems. You want to, at least I do, want to ensure that I'm being as close on the mark as possible. And not only phonetically, I believe in reading with something before you put it out in the world. So research is not just researching things technically, historically, but it's also researching to how you feel about something. And so the Tamil language is hard. There are three pronunciations of the letter L in the Tamil language. The Avadhi language is a slightly different dialect adjacent to Sanskrit. But that was the language that the Hanuman Chalisa is in, which I've done a version of on the album. And you'll find many versions of the Hanuman Chalisa in the world. It was written by a great, great and very revered, respected poet called Tulsidas. And it's very slightly different. And a lot of the versions of this, a lot of people kind of slang it into Hindi, or they think it's Sanskrit, but actually the Avadhi language, even though the written form is the same as Sanskrit, the pronunciation is slightly different. So I was lucky enough to find people who have researched and studied this. And then I had to, you know, spend some serious time trying to get this right. And also researching, you know, the meanings of these things, where I've done the songs with English and Sanskrit to make sure that I'm capturing the actual words in Sanskrit. And Sanskrit is the kind of language where, depending on the context of the sentence that you're putting it in, the meaning of the word slightly alters. So it's a living language. Like, it's almost like each word is a kind of baby that kind of fits into the family of words around it. And so I want to be able to get the translations as concise and as naturally and as purely as possible. And so, yeah, it took a long time. And then instrumentally, to try and decide which instruments bring out the flavor of these divine words and expressions and poems more succinctly, because certain instruments in the Indian culture actually are from the mythology and connected to the actual sounds themselves. Because these sounds are actually derived from the cosmos. They're derived from the planets and the stars. And in the Eastern system, you have music is basically the core from which everything is created in the universe. And each kind of sound kind of connects to a certain instrumentation or sound quality. So I had to research that as well. You know, well, it isn't that I had to, I wanted to. It wasn't work for me.
Yeah, you're honoring the song, you're honoring the culture, and as you said, you want to be as authentic and accurate as you can. And I can see that in having a song come together and then all of a sudden say, this is a song that I need someone to play sitar on. And then is sitar exactly the instrument that I want? Who do I know that can play that? And then once it's performed, does that sound the way that I was moved to write it? And so I love where this conversation is going, because audience, if you've been listening to the show for a long time, thank you. But in 550 episodes, we haven't really heard a guest talk about this depth of research. We've heard people that have said this album was 6 years in the making, but it was generally I got sidetracked for a year, or I had written this song 6 years ago, and then I wrote another one 4 years ago, and I needed more to fill up an album. So this is very different. And Radhika, I want to back up to when you were talking about the heart, that you can't force the heart, because it's the same thing with songwriting. If you force the songwriting just because you need to finish a project because you're trying to hit a certain deadline, it's not going to be your best song. And if you force your heart, it's not going to be a true, pure spirit. It's not going to be a natural, genuine connection and a logical emotion to have. So these are all wonderful details that you're sharing with us.
Thank you. Yes. And you know, I think if you love music, you love anything, love doesn't operate to a timeline, right? Mm. So it has no timeline. And I think the most beautiful things in the world and the things that we can be most proud of are ones that emerge naturally. And I just really wanted to create conditions for this to bloom naturally. You know, you can't force a flower to bloom. You can't, right? So you have to just create the conditions around the flower. You have to water the soil. You have to make sure it's not getting too dry. You want to make sure the animals around it are working in the naturalness of their
wow.
environment.
Wow.
My job as an artist is not to think that it's about me. I think oftentimes we as creatives, we kind of get it a little topsy-turvy. We think we're the ones creating something, but we're not. We're simply creating the conditions around that which needs to be created. So even in my music, I don't even think of it as me. I come to a point in my life where I can just observe what's happening and just love it and try and honor it. I really revere sound, and I respect the expression of music and sound so much that I just want to be as tender and respectful as possible.
Yeah, and what came into my head as you were describing that of not forcing it and just kind of letting a flower grow by itself is in the documentary This Is It, the Michael Jackson tour that unfortunately never happened. Michael Jackson, you see him stopping the rehearsal and saying, no, no, you have to let the song simmer. You have to let it marinate. And he's telling them, don't force the song. And so I totally see that in what you're describing. Before I have you start into one of the powerful stories that I'm going to ask you to share, let's do a little background setting first, because I'm not sure that I'm actually clear on this myself, let alone the audience. I read that you have Indian, East African, and British roots. Is that just on your family tree, or have you actually lived in India and in Africa and in Great Britain? Explain all of that, if you would.
Yes, yeah, so my grandparents are from India. My parents are from East Africa, and I was born in the UK, and now I live in Los Angeles. However, I grew up with a real mix of those cultures. Obviously, growing up in the UK, with an Indian family that was, you know, my parents were born in East Africa. The cultures were very, very much alive. I visited India and East Africa several times. And, you know, those cultures really pulsate in my being. I carry those cultures very, very strongly. The music of those environments was around me growing up. My father was actually a singer, so we had a lot of music in the home. A lot of those musicians who played with very notable musicians actually would be in my home with music gatherings and, you know, just everybody sitting on the floor and banging on drums and playing harmonium. And growing up that way, it was one of those kind of upbringings where people would just turn up at your house. And so the cultures of my ancestors was just very, very palpable for me growing up. And I have a very, very strong connection to my roots. And I believe it's actually what's kept me anchored, just like a tree.
Mm.
You know, the deeper your roots go, the stronger you are when the wind blows, right?
Mm.
And my parents always instilled that in me. You know, they said, you're growing up in the UK, you are a Western kid, and you have to appreciate and be grateful for where you've grown up and the opportunities that this brings. However, do not forget where you come from. And so I was always brought up with this respect for my elders, respect for my lineage and heritage and those that came before me. And, you know, music is my way of feeling them, because these sounds were also heard by my ancestors. And so the more that I do this music, the more just, you know, I think that me living in America, it's interesting. It's like my family has moved away from India, but at some point it's almost like going full circle, and at some point I'll end up back in India. And it's really felt like the further I've come away, even when I moved from the UK to America, it's boomeranging me back even stronger to my Indian roots. And then with the African kind of, you know, transition that my kind of parents took in their birth, I always honor that ancestry through the percussion, because I feel African percussion so much, and even the wisdom and philosophy of the East African lands and the kind of Kenyan culture and Ugandan culture that was kind of subtly woven into the way that I grew up. I would hear Swahili growing up. You know, that language was very popular to speak in my home growing up. My parents would speak that when they didn't want us to understand what they were saying, because we understood Gujarati, we understood a little Hindi, we obviously understood English. So they were thinking, well, how can we speak about the kids when so they would speak Swahili. So I was so fortunate to be just, you know, exposed to all of these sounds. And again, you know, to reiterate, these languages are very, very old. So they just permeated my system, and they're just a part of who I am and the music.
Speaking of locations, I just want to circle back to the Warriors of Light album. Is it safe to assume that that was recorded in Los Angeles?
That was produced in Los Angeles and mastered here. However, actually, we have the flautist from India, Shashank Acharya. We have Pratik Srivastava, who's on Sarod in India. We have Alok Varma, who's a tabla player in the UK. We have Kit Wakely, who's in Oklahoma.
Wow.
We have Max VT, who's in New York.
Wow.
We have Vidya Prabhar, who's in Canada. We have MV Gordy, who's here. We have George, who's here, who produced it. There's a wonderful guy called Roger Montagiano, who did a Dolby Atmos mix of the last big song on the album, and he's in Madrid. So this album is, you know, just kind of gone from the land that my grandparents are from India, through Europe, and then through London, and then across America. I spent a lot of time in New York. So it's really touched upon all of the places that my, you know, recent lineage, I would say, have resided and kind of absorbed. So it's really kind of spread across the world.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Quickly, folks, let's give you my tour dates. Whoever is listening that is or will be in one of these cities, I would love to meet you. It is the 2024 NHTE Tour, 10 years of talking tunes, as I go around the country and look to meet and thank this podcast's audience. The show hit the milestone 10-year anniversary back on February 17th, but I am celebrating it all year long. So this was an exclusive in last Wednesday's email newsletter, another good reason to get on the mailing list for that. But September 23rd to the 28th, I will be in Los Angeles, including, but not limited to, speaking at the Outlier Podcast Festival. The next week, October 1st through the 6th, I will be in the Florida Panhandle at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, including, but not limited to, putting on a Promoting Your Music Career workshop on Saturday morning, October 5. There is no cost to attend that. It is free and open to the public. Friday night, October 11th, I will be at the West Dawson Music Venue in Dawson Springs, Kentucky, for a show featuring three Nashville songwriters. At the beginning of December, I will be in Las Vegas speaking at the Las Vegas Writers Retreat, which, by the way, is for writers of books, not music. There is also a good chance of two other tour dates, two other cities being added. Sign up for the newsletter, keep listening to the show, follow on Instagram. I would love to meet you somewhere out on the road. Honestly, I always say, without the audience, it would essentially be me and the guest just having a phone conversation. This show is about all of you and the guests. It's not about me. Radhika, first and foremost, before we get too far into things, wow, what an amazing story. There will certainly be people who will come to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment because they know you, family, friends, fans, followers. And if you are in that category, welcome. Thank you for making time to listen to this interview. Do please check out some other episodes of the show. But I have also been fortunate to get listeners from 165 countries around the world over the 10 and a half years of this show. So for those folks, Radhika, who might just be getting introduced to you for the first time, explain what I'm referring to in terms of what challenge you took head on that made music your voice.
Thank you for asking that. Some people might not know, even some people who know me who are tuning into this show may not know this about my past, but I had an extremely chronic speech impediment when I was younger, actually well into my adulthood, and it prohibited me from really speaking with any kind of natural rhythm, as much as I talk about naturalness in life now. And as with many people who have a speech impediment, music is really solace. So the interesting thing is I was always able to sing, but I wasn't able to speak. So that really made singing my playground, you know, and I played classical music since I was 6 years old on the piano. And, you know, music was just this place where I could feel completely free with my expression. And I was really fortunate to have discovered that and had that, because I don't know what I would have done having a chronic speech impediment. It was really, really hard. Really difficult as a child, especially.
And so what was it that helped you overcome it? Obviously, we're hearing you speaking fluently so far during this interview. So was there one significant something, or was it gradual? How did you finally overcome this?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I actually still have it now sometimes. But what happens with these mantras, so a lot of my music involves mantras, like sacred mantras in Sanskrit. And I mentioned before that it's a vibratory language. And what happens is it begins to work with your nervous system. So just a quick thing, like Sanskrit and these ancient languages hit five nerve centers in the mouth, whereas modern languages only hit three. So you're stimulating your nervous system far more, literally 60% more than you would with Western languages. And that has a profound effect on your nervous system. And anybody you speak to about speech impediment, you'll speak to a speech neurologist or pathologist, they'll say that it has a lot to do with the activation or the kind of unsettledness of the nervous system. And so when I started to revisit these mantras as an adult, it's something that I naturally did as a child. I was chanting like when I was little, but then I came away from it, as you do. You know, you want to do everything Western. But when I came back to it in my adulthood, something began to happen. And I had profound experiences where I could actually feel my nervous system begin to relax. And then it's kind of a testament to just making any sound in life. Like when you're making sounds that are pure or you're speaking about things that you love, your system will naturally relax. And what happened is my excitement and fascination with these sound sciences, which they really are sound, the science behind them, my fascination and my delving into them allowed me to just feel this joy in my life, as well as the effect of the mantras themselves. But I just decided at some point, I'm just going to do what I love. It's a very simple rule for me now. I literally will only commit to things that I feel fascinated and, you know, joy through. But it really began to shake off not only the kind of tender hooks around my speech, But it also began to make me be able to discern in my life, what do I want around me? What's conducive to my path and my stillness? So these vibrations have a really profound effect on our lives in general. You get really clear about what is good for you in your path. And it doesn't mean that it's the same for everybody. But we often get confused, right, in life. We think we're supposed to be doing this and that and all these other things because the world shows us that that's what success is.
That's right.
And for me, I mean, this music in my study is pretty niche. If we think about it, it's not necessarily commercial radio, top Billboard 100 stuff. I would love for it to be, but it's what gets me excited. It's what literally brings a smile on my face and every cell in me. And it's double pronged, if you will. It's the science of the language itself and the profound impact it has on your nervous system, but also just being in that complete alignment with what brings you that joy. And I found that as I did this, my ability to speak with more clarity came through. And I also found myself, you know, getting opportunities to publicly speak, which I never would have thought was possible. I'm telling you, Bruce, if someone had told me a few years ago that I would be on a podcast online with you, just speaking this way, I wouldn't have believed them.
Mm. Wow.
So this music has had such a huge effect on me, and that's why I'm so... It's just my place to share it, because I think, well, if it's helped me gather some clarity in who I am and give me that more freedom to move through the world, I wonder how many more people this could help in their own way. You know, that's why I do this.
Yeah, we do often hear about the healing qualities, the healing properties of music, and we're hearing testimony to that now. An audience, in listening to Radhika share, she said that music was her playground. When you have something like a speech impediment, you need some sort of outlet. And hearing her share about facing a speech impediment, her victory story actually gets even more amazing in that, unfortunately, Radhika had also experienced bullying. Radhika, can you share about that, including, of course, the impact that had on you musically?
Yes. I can laugh about it now, but it was very, very hard. You know, imagine being a kid who, at the beginning of every school year, you know, we have in England, you get up and you say your name and introduce yourself. And I just couldn't say my name.
Mm.
And think about what that's like as a child. And I'm telling you, English class was the worst, because we would get asked to stand up and read passages from books.
Oh, boy.
In front of a whole class of people. It was a very large kind of teachable moment. And it was rough. And, you know, you're bullied as a kid. You know, we're bullied for many things in life. But I think that having a speech impediment, I look at it now as it doing me a favor, because I had to go into the things that I loved in order to survive in my mind. You know, because bullying has such a huge impact on your mind. You know, never mind the physical bullying. That's one thing. The physical bullying was really hard. But imagine, you know, the imprint on the mind lasts a lot longer, right? And so that was a very, very tough thing to go through. That actually happened well into my adulthood. You would think that it's just little children that do, but in my adulthood, you know, people come with their own set of formations of their own lives to make them the characters that they are. And we're all just characters. And I see everybody as just a mirror of what's going on. And every time that would happen, you know, I was very fortunate. I had parents who cultivated an extremely loving environment for me at home. They didn't make a big deal of my speech impediment, which I think is really amazing. They didn't make me feel like I was, you know, abnormal or that there was a problem with me. And, you know, we just focused on the things that were more celebrated, like music and art and my studies and, you know, focusing on the things that made me expand as a human being rather than talk about the things that I was experiencing that made me contract. Mm. And as long as the expansion is more than the contraction, you're growing, right? And that's the balance that I had in my life. So even if I got physically into a situation where somebody hurt me physically, or, you know, I had to, there were some pretty serious incidents, I had enough to focus on in my life that made me feel like that the space and freedom was more than the moment.
Mm. Powerful, powerful. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Los Angeles by award-winning artist Radhika Vakharia. Visit her official website at radhikavakharia.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Her new album, Warriors of Light, comes out the day after tomorrow, Friday, August 30th. If you are hearing this interview the day of or the day after its release, pre-save that album. Otherwise, do support Radhika by purchasing a download of this newest project. Stick around because I am going to be asking her about the two very significant performances she has coming up next month that you heard me mention back in the intro. Incidentally, on radhikavakharia.com, click into the music section, and there are very hearty links there for each project in her back catalog in terms of where you can access those. Also on her website, there are links, logos, for Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram, so you can follow and engage with her on one or more of those. Her music is on numerous streaming platforms, as I said, but I want to point out Spotify and SoundCloud in particular, as both of those also is where you can find Now Hear This Entertainment. Speaking of the numerous platforms we all have at our fingertips, Owl is a great place to make new contacts. Owl, like the bird, except with two W's and two L's. If you are someone that just does not get out to networking events, here is a way to make connections without even having to leave home. Owl is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. Since it has so many users, there are lots and lots of categories represented. People who do everything from website design to advertising to productivity coaching to marketing to caregiving to digital products, AI, photography, app development, the list goes on. This morning, I even saw a trademark lawyer on there. And of course, you can call me on there to talk about this show or podcasting in general or something that hopefully I can help you with. Here is how to get started. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click into the news section and then look for the article in there under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. The Owl app is free to download, and I have links in that article to get it from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, I have my invitation code in that article because you will need that as you're setting up the app on your phone. It is a required field. Radhika, since I just mentioned your two big shows next month, let's get into those two. September 14th, you will be performing at Sages and Sciences with Deepak Chopra at Harvard. And then on September 29th, you will be performing at the Clive Davis Theater at the Grammy Museum. Outstanding on both counts. Congratulations. Tell us about both events, including if these are ticketed, open to the public events that listeners can attend if they are or will be in the area for either one of those.
Thank you so much, Chris. Yes, so Sages and Scientists is a symposium that's being held at Harvard from the weekend of the 13th to the 15th of September. And I will be performing a very, very special composition that I've been working on for quite a while. And it's going to be one of the kind of premier pieces. So I'm really excited to be joining Deepak and the team. And the whole symposium is going to be full of thought leaders and leaders of industry. So we have like Dr. Oz there, we have Gary Vaynerchuk there, and yeah, Deepak and the team from Chopra Wellness. So it's going to be a really fascinating weekend, and I'm really looking forward to being there as well. And then at the Clive Davis Theatre and the Grammy Museum, that's going to be a showcase of a variety of artists at an event called Mosaic. And yeah, it's a showcase where I get to do a 20-minute set. I'm really excited because I've never performed at the Grammy Museum, and it's such an iconic venue, and I'll be doing kind of a medley sample of this album, and I'm really excited. We have great artists like Moshe Modi, Stephen Chesney, like, and Alison Chani, and people like that, so it's a variety of music. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to those. And both of them, I believe the Sages and Scientists is available to the public. The one at the Grammy Museum, I think it's more for Recording Academy and members. But for anybody that connects with me on my website or through my Instagram, if it's an open event, you'll definitely see it there. And if you're able to come, it will be fantastic because the audience and the attendees will be full of creative geniuses.
Wonderful, wonderful. The speech impediment and bullying are two amazing breakthroughs, and there's something else you achieved that was significant that I would love for you to tell us about. In 2021, you garnered attention on the social platform Clubhouse with over 100,000 listeners. Walk us through that development.
So yeah, Bruce, that was a pivotal moment in my life, to be honest, Clubhouse. So for anyone that doesn't know, it was an audio app that came around about end of 2019, I believe, or to early 2020. And honestly, that journey was amazing. In around February, I was sitting there one night after, there's a special celebration in the Vedic calendar, Vedic civilization and culture, is really where all these mantras and sounds come from. And so there's a day called Mahashivratri, and it's the great night of like this powerful, destructive, and ultimately creative force in the universe. You know, no big deal, it's a small concept. And and normally that night, you know, I get together with people and you sing and you stay up all night and you meditate and you chant. And obviously, because of the way the world was, we couldn't be with people in person. And that night, I really just wanted to chant. I just really wanted to share it with people. And we were in isolation, and I just literally picked up my phone and went on Clubhouse. I'd been on it for a couple of weeks, didn't really know how it worked. And went on it just with my little headphones and started a room and started chanting mantras around Shiva. And I was only supposed to do it for about half an hour. And as the room went on, it was suddenly 45 people, 62 people, 73 people, 85 people. And I had about 110, 12 people, and I had to keep going. And I was on this room for about 2 hours. Oh, well, I may as well just continue chanting. And that told me that there's something that people need at this time. And it simply started because I just wanted to sing. I just wanted to share. I didn't expect anything to come of it. And over the next few months, you know, I would get a little more equipment and I would sit at my piano and I would get a better microphone and I would go, okay, I want to turn this into an experience for people. And every month I would do these sessions. They were called these moon and mantra sessions. So I would do it on the full moon and the new moon, and everybody would know when that was on, and people would get up. They would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning in their time zone and know that that session was happening. And I would curate this whole music and mantra, you know, kind of woven in with philosophy and storytelling. And I would look at the Vedic astrology at the time and correlate that to, okay, which mantras and sounds and music and tones would be most beneficial and supportive for people at this time. Because I love to study Vedic astrology. So all these sciences are kind of connected. So it's a whole rabbit hole world that I just love playing in. And I would tell these stories. And, you know, and what was beautiful is that the music became not only a support for people, but I could bring in these ancient stories and bring them in a way that was practical and connected to modern life. You know, all of them hold very, very deep meanings, but a story is not really practical unless you kind of extract the meaning and apply it to our lives today, right? So otherwise, it's just, it goes from it being entertainment versus an integration of meaning. And so I can entertain you, but I'd rather bring a meaning and kind of offer a way for it to be integrated and useful and practical for your day to day, right? So it was just this beautiful dance of music and knowledge and wisdom and learning for me. I learned a lot in that process, and there was something that just so beautiful that blossomed out of it. And I ended up getting over 100,000 listeners from all over the world.
Amazing.
It was amazing. And most people didn't know what Sanskrit was. They didn't know what this was, but they said, I feel something deeply that I've not felt before, thank God, you know? And that's the job, is to just offer something where people can hopefully feel something.
That's right. You were being in service to the song, which by extension, you were being in service to this worldwide community that had joined you there on Clubhouse. Amazing. I mentioned two names back at the start of the show, Prince and Enrique Iglesias, that I would love to hear the stories about in terms of your connection with each of them.
Yes, so I kind of look back on that and think, was that a dream? It really feels like it. But yeah, I was actually part of a support act that was at Prince's O2 Arena tour. So I did a lot of different forms of music in my career. And Now I've honed in on the sacred music because
sure.
that's what was always meant to be. But I did a lot of different types of music. I did backing vocals for a lot of artists. I did support acts. So I was there for two nights at Prince's legendary O2 Arena and was a support act for him. And it was really incredible, you know, to just be part of that whole experience and, you know, walk in the back hallways where everything's lit up in purple. And then, you know, see him do a private sound check and be one of four people in the front row watching him sing The Beautiful Ones on keys within this giant O2 Arena and just be there and have that intimate moment with him, you know. I didn't realize at the time, honestly, if I'm being really honest, when you're in those moments and you're performing and you're kind of just on a schedule and you're doing all these things, you know, sometimes you don't get a moment to really realize what's happening. And it was afterwards, and as the years have gone on, that experience is really, it's become more profound. It's kind of become, that memory has become its own thing. So that was amazing. And then with Enrique Iglesias, you know, I met him. I can't remember whether it was Rome or Greece. I can't remember. It was part of this festival, and he was one of the main acts there. So I think we did join him for a song on stage, and he was lovely, such a gentleman and so sweet. So it's kind of bizarre, though. It all feels like a dream.
But I can relate to what you're saying because I was at the 2004 and the 2008 Summer Olympics working. And when I was about to go to Beijing for the 2008 Olympics, a colleague of mine who understood the gravity of the work said, I know that you have so much before you when you're over there, but make sure that you take time at some point to stop and realize what a unique position you're in and to just look around at where you are professionally, never mind the fact that you're over at the Olympic Games. And so that was really good advice, and I'm glad that he told me that. I did make sure that I took time out and did that because, like you say, you get so caught up in everything that it's 10 years later and you look back and you think, I'm glad that I was able to go and I'm grateful for it, but boy, I wish I would have soaked in it a little bit more.
I think you learn that, though, through your experience. And I love that you said that. And I think that goes for anything in life, really. I think that goes for even just when you're with people one-on-one, not even in a grand setting, you know?
Agreed.
I mean, this conversation to me is just, it's beautiful. It's like utter and complete presence, you know?
Thank you.
I'm taking the time to even enjoy this.
Thank you. I remember way back on episode 356 of this show, December of 2020, my guest was singer, songwriter, piano player Frankie Love. And there's a quote from that interview that I want to read to you, Radhika, and have you react to, because I wonder if this is consistent with what you are doing. She said, quote, when you're in 432, meaning 432 hertz, when you're in 432 frequency, which is what the album is in, it connects you to your intuition and it opens your heart chakra and it makes you feel really calm so that you can hear the truth and you can find your way in life, end quote.
Yes, I would agree with that. Because 432 is the sound of nature. And our world is constructed actually out of frequency with that. So that's why when we're in nature, like when we go for a walk in the forest or we hear animals and we hear the ocean, that's why our system relaxes. Our heart can actually hear itself. That's why we feel so good, you know? So I would agree with Frankie. Actually, I know Frankie.
You do? Wow. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What a small world. As we get ready to wind things down, I'm looking at, as I mentioned in the intro, over 2.6 million streams of your top five songs on Spotify alone, well over 67,000 monthly listeners on that platform, 427,000 plus combined video views on your YouTube channel. Clearly what you are doing is resonating with people. All the songwriters, all the performers that I talk to, they always say that they just want their music, their songs, to make the audience feel something. And you have a quote that people will see all over as they look you up online, which is, I do not make music for you to see me. I make it for you to see yourself, end quote. I would say that those numbers that I just listed seem to indicate that you are accomplishing that. Yes?
I would hope so. I would hope so. I mean, I think when you hear music and you love it, you see something of yourself in there, right? Like music is a mirror. And if you keep coming back to it, it's because you're seeing something that you've never seen before. And self-discovery is the journey of life. And that's why music is the greatest and most profound tool to do that with.
Wonderfully said. Wonderfully said. We are going to close today with another song from Radhika, one called Liberate. And I'm not going to even try to pronounce what it says in parentheses after that. But before I let you go and I play that song, Radhika, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
I'm really glad that you asked that. So the song is called Liberate. In parentheses, it says Maha Mrityunjaya. And so this song is probably the most heartfelt, one of the most heartfelt songs on the album. You know, I think at the time when I wrote it, the world was in a place of questioning a lot of what we understood about ourselves, a lot of what we understood about life, how this planet works. And, you know, we all went through a period of incredible isolation. And in that isolation, I think we all started to ask very, very deep questions. And one of the questions that I think not only get asked then, but asked at some point in our lives when we go through something very difficult, you know, even if we have a faith, sometimes we get to a point saying, do I really believe in what I believe in? We might believe in God. We might believe in a divine presence or a creator or, you know, the meaning of life. And sometimes we kind of teeter on the edge of that and say, you know, I'm doubtful. Are you really there? And even I went through that. You know, I'm not going to be one of these people who says, oh, I've been meditating for years and I'm on, you know, on some kind of spiritual path and I don't waver. I think it's very natural to waver and ask the question. I think it's just honest. And so this song, it came about as kind of asking the question of, is whatever higher power listening to us? Are you listening to me? Can you hear what's going on here? And the chorus is a very old mantra from the Rig Veda. It's a very, very old, very powerful mantra. It's the Maha Mrityunjaya mantra, and it means the great victory. And it's basically something that you chant and say when you're facing the end or you're feeling like you're at the end of something. It was very powerful in my life because there were moments that I would have panic attacks, or there would be moments where my mind felt like it was kind of just not going to a good place. And this mantra is like it's like tightened the elastic band. I'm telling you, it really brought me back. So I have experienced fully, honestly, this particular mantra and its power to bring you back. And it's known in the Vedic culture and in the spirituality to be one of the most profound things. Even facing the end of your life, people chant this. It kind of naturally came about. I didn't really know what I was doing. I just sang in English what I was feeling in my heart. And then the chorus just naturally felt like an answer, and the answer was the mantra. And after making this, and then as the song goes on, there's an interplay of the English and the Sanskrit and, you know, ad-libbing. And I realized this even a year, like a long time after writing the song, oh my goodness, this is the questions of the modern world being answered by the ancient world.
Wow.
And I really feel like we're living in this time where, you know, our world today is looking to the ancient world for answers. So this song is this union. It's this divine union of our modern era and the knowledge and the wisdom of the past and all these things coming together. I really do believe we have the answers already. We just need to be humble enough to kind of bow our heads to what's been before.
Such a terrific description and audience. I'm anxious for you to hear the song now. But Radhika, first, let me say thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. It was wonderful to talk to you, and I really enjoyed the conversation.
You too, Bruce. It was fantastic. Thank you. You make me understand my music even more. So it's absolutely wonderful. And congratulations on this podcast.
Thank you. And congratulations on the new album that comes out the day after tomorrow. In advance, congratulations. I'm excited for your two big shows in September. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to award-winning artist Radhika Vakharia. Again, do visit her official website at radhikavakharia.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Her new album, Warriors of Light, comes out the day after tomorrow. That's Friday, August 30th. If you are hearing this interview the day of or the day after its release, pre-save that album. Otherwise, do support Radhika by purchasing a download of this newest project. September 14th, she will be performing at Harvard, and September 29th, she will be at the Grammy Museum. If you are or will be in either one of those locations, look for details on the ability to attend. On RadhikaVakaria.com, there are links, logos, to connect with her on lots of different platforms. This morning, I followed her on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I'm sure she would appreciate you doing the same. As I mentioned, she is putting up impressive numbers on YouTube. Visit and subscribe to her official channel, and then watch and like the videos posted on there. For that matter, tell Radhika you heard her and her music on Now Hear This Entertainment. Remember that on her website, if you click into the music section, you will see her discography, and you can click onto each item in the back catalog for access to those on various platforms. Spotify and SoundCloud are two of the many, and both of those are where you can also listen to Now Hear This Entertainment. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you are enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Radhika and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, 10 and a half years without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 550. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Radhika Vakaria. This is the one she just talked about. It's called Liberate.
Are you there? In the corners of the darkness, do you hear all the cries amongst a billion souls of fear? Reveal the peace within your being. See me kneel before you now. Liberate all the need within my body. I want to know, because I feel you hear me calling. Let me fall, fall away from underneath my feelings. Let me go to the unknown where we're found. Om Trayambakam Yajamahi Sugandhim Pushti Vardhana Vabandhanal Mrityur Mukshiya Mamrita. Om Trayambakam Yajamahi Sugandhim Pushti Vardhana Urvarakam Vabandhanal Mrityur Mukshiya Mamrita. Time and space, where the wind.